And welcome, and thank you for listening to Dollars and Making Sense. I'm Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. This is a weekly radio program about finance, money and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and nationally now on the community radio network around Australia. I'm really pleased and privileged to have at the microphone today a football great, Simon Madden. Now, Simon, before I invite you to start speaking, it's kind of funny. I proudly went around my local neighbourhood saying, hey, I've got Simon Madden to come on my interview. And living in New South Wales, they just shrug their shoulders and go, huh? Who's that? And so I guess
Tell them to give me a ring. I'll tell them. All
right? So I guess you must have the ability to be able to wander through Queensland and New South Wales being a nobody, but you can't walk anywhere in the hallowed grounds of Melbourne or the southern states that are AFL nuts, right?
Look, it's an interesting concept because people will say, people in Victoria, where is the home of AFL footy, even though it's a national league now, people will say, oh, I saw you Tuesday night. And I said, what? I saw you Tuesday night. So I was home Tuesday night. They said, oh, no, they replayed that game from 85 and I watched it on. Well, you still get that connection. And I finished 30 years ago. So, but it just keeps coming up in Victoria. And once a footballer, like if you're a rugby player, rugby league, rugby union player in New South Wales or Queensland, that people recognise you, especially the older people. And that AFL footballer in Melbourne, you still get recognised. But it's good. You know, most people are very nice, very friendly. And it gives you a nice introduction to a whole lot of people, a whole lot of situations, which I'm very, very grateful. Including something like this, right, where we're talking dollars and cents on a national radio program, which is, I have a little bit to do with that, but my interest now is more about improving people, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about that. But of course, I've been in business, small, medium, large, national, international, my own for over 25 years, so I understand where you're coming from, where your program's coming from, and in social context of modern Australia with interest rates, etc., and post-COVID, so making more sense of dollars and cents is very, very critical.
Absolutely. And I might give our audience a little bit of context. The 1985 game that those punters were probably referring to was the year that Simon won the Norm Smith Medal, which for those in the northern states don't know, that's the best player on the ground for the grand final. And just a quick summary, Simon played with Essendon from 1974 to 1992, a total of 378 games, and played his entire career at the one club, which is a fairly rare thing these days, isn't it?
Look, it is. I did have offers to go elsewhere, but, you know, it's all about timing and place. And I was settled in my position with my family, my house, my work, etc. And so while those offers were good, I was always keen to stay. And we at the time, one of those offers came and I could have gone to Sydney. And it was just after we'd won two premierships in a row. So you still think you might be able to get another one. So that aspiration of sport was that it might have been better to stay with the old club than go to the new one, which didn't eventually, of course, but... But, you know, all those things, it's not, and I'll say this, a few times in this program, it's not what you do and it's not what happens to you, it's how you react to that. And that's what in the financial world or in the business world at the moment, you can have a very, very negative view to something or you can have a positive view, but you've got to accept what actually happens rather than put a wall up or put a false hope up. You actually take the world as it is and then be able to react the way that you see best makes it positive for you.
So, look, the reason I've invited you onto the show, Simon, we met at a conference last year and I was really keen to get your take because we've had a lot of people talk about women's health, mental health, and I've done a lot of shows with one of our guest collaborators, Philippa Hunt from Wise Girls Money. We've done a lot of shows on the impact of financial stress to women, but having been a junior player myself and a follower of AFL for much of my life, I'm curious at how you look at masculinity in the context of recent societal movements and that masculinity in mental health terms, given that, you know, we've had Me Too and there's certainly a much greater mental health awareness that is starting to impact areas of the financial industry as well. So are men coping in that workplace today, do you think?
Look, I think it's a great question, and in lots of areas, no. And I think, as we talked about, there's a more awareness of mental health. Historically, people would just hide it. It was seen as a weakness. So you could, if you broke your arm, you know, people would be sympathetic to you. Oh, you've got an injury. If you're having real mental health problems, people weren't sympathetic, and you'd just have to hide it. You know, the old grin and bear it. You know, bite your tongue and go on with it. And I think one of the problems, well, not a problem, but one of the issues is that we've educated people. And educated people ask questions, and educated people test the status quo. I look back my life. Now, my dad died when I was young. I was 13. My older brother was 14 and a half. My younger brother was 10. We were young. Mum did a great job, fantastic job. But I look at him. He was an ex-serviceman at the time, 56 years old. Two packets of Viscount a day, turf, real cigarettes. as I say, real coffin nails, not the vaping they do now, which is dangerous enough. And I can remember looking back now and seeing post-traumatic stress disorder. He didn't really know about it. And he was a good dad, but he just would fly off the handle over little things, and not just with us, with anybody. And you look back, they were real signs of that. But back then it was, oh, let's just hold it in. And unfortunately, men are very good at killing themselves. And I should say that if we're going to talk suicide, that might be triggers for people. So just be aware that I'm going to discuss a little bit of that. 75% of suicides are men and 25% are women. So we are actually, unfortunately, very good at it. And one of the reasons behind that is that the world used to be very simple. I look at the world, my grandfather I never met, he would have hoped, he wouldn't even ask for things. He would have just got on and done his job. My dad probably hoped for, and this is what I'm talking about, hope for it. I probably asked for it. And young people now probably demand that the workplace is a safe and happy and a good place to work. But historically, it hasn't necessarily been that. It's been a really hard place to work. So if you showed any sign of weakness, you were seen as weak. And one of the signs of weakness historically for people was mental health. Now I've been educated, and I'm a big advocate for looking after your whole health, and that's four parts of your health, which is your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And that will take a whole lot longer than this program to discuss.
Just a little.
But I look back on my football career, and I know it tested me both physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And the spiritual part, very quickly, is not just about religion, because spirituality can have religion or not have religion. It's up to you. It's what you believe. And spirituality is what you believe about yourself, the world around you, family, your friends, the world around you, and the greater world. So we're coming into a world now where people are questioning all of that. People are questioning how the workplace works, especially the last 3 years. You know, are you work from home? Are you in your home office or in your downstairs office? You're on the couch. All that about work used to be a place you went. Now work is something you do. And there's so many layers of it now, and I don't want to complicate it. But basically, the short answer to that is there's a lot of the same. You know, men are still men, women are still women, but there's a whole spread of how we see our sexuality and our gender, and that's, again, another
another tangled web. Yes, absolutely.
If men are understanding and safe in their own reality and they're authentic in their own self, they're in a lot better position to have a better mental health. But in the modern world, work puts a lot of pressures on people, and then we start to question them, and then if we're seen to have weakness, it becomes even harder for us. So I think in male, you know, straight male in the workplace, I don't think it's changed a lot, other than there's a lot more variety that we have to deal with. It was very simple. Do what your dad did, be what your dad was, much simple. Now there's a whole range, which, again, people start to question, and a lot of us don't have answers to it. And for me, it's be your authentic self. You be yourself and make sure you understand other people's authentic selves, and you can get along. A big thing on teamwork I do is you can get along in the workplace and do really, really well.
Yeah, they're fascinating aspects of, I think, looking at generational change, because you and I are roughly the same age. I'm a couple of years younger than you. You're born 57. I was born in 60. And so I guess from that perspective, my old man also was a World War II survivor. On the other side, though, I've got to say, which always generated some rather fascinating discussions when I was a commissioned officer. But I guess when you look at men from the World War II phases and Korea and Vietnam, and then you look at our phase, and now you look at the current phase that we're looking at, there have been some fundamental and I think monumental changes, I think, in that workplace environment, and not just a technological aspect, but I think we are facing, I think, a whole variety of different tensions. Do you think in the whole, though, that men are coping better today? You talk a lot about education.
I would say I've got four adult children, so, and they've all got partners, two males, two females, two boys, two girls, and I see how they interact with people. And I remember, like, if my father, and again, we came through a Catholic upbringing, so my father said that gay people are sinful, right? And then in my time, I would have been brought up and said, oh, look, you know, gay people, it's not the right thing. And now I'm 65 years old, I haven't got time to worry about people's background. There's only X amount of years left. If they're genuine people, I'm happy to deal with them. I have some great friends who are gay, and I look at my kids now, and that's not even a question. You are what you are. If you turn up straight, you turn up gay, you turn up LGBTQI plus, whatever, in the workplace, are you a genuine person? Are you a good worker? And they are the measurements. Now, some men are starting to get that, and I get it. I'm happy to work with anybody. But there are still people, remember, generation of privileged white male, which I'm supposed to fit into. So they put me in the category.
Likewise.
They put me in the category already. But that was just do what your dad did and just do what he did. So if you're stuck in that rut, it is really, really hard to try and change. I've got a friend whose dad's in his 90s. I've stopped trying to change his view on life. You know, he's so politically incorrect, it's unbelievable. It's very funny to the point. But I just think that, well, he's not going to change between 94 and 96. So why would I spend time trying to change him? What about the someone who's coming through at 18 and 19, 20 and still has a lot to learn? I love to deal with those people and get them. So I think a lot of men are coping, but men aren't. But, of course, it's got more complex. And they can't just do what their fathers did. I'm the boss, I'm white, I'm male, I'll tell you what to do. The world doesn't work that way. And if you're still trying to think that way, you think in the armed forces. It used to always be male. And then you couldn't have female officers, you couldn't have females in charge, but the world's changed. And you couldn't have gay people in the army, but now that's changed. You see, the world is changing. Two things in life are short: death and taxes. Right, we're all going to get taxed, and we're all going to die. Yeah. So along the way, I keep saying, life is short, and then you die. Excuse me, not to be too. Life is short, and then you die. And if you live to be 100, in the history of the world, that's not even a blink. So what are you going to do in that time? Are you going to be negative? Are you going to be angry? Are you going to try and rip people off? Or are you just going to try and do the best you can with what you've got and the people around you? And I think that type of mindset is a much better one than, oh, he said, she said, they said, who, what, when, where, and questioning negatively everything rather than looking for an answer, looking for a positive answer. So I'm big on, in my last, whatever, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, working with people to have a positive outlook on their life. And there's science behind this. And again, that's another program, how the mind works, subconscious and conscious thinking. Conscious thought is about, out of 100%, conscious thought, depending on which model, is 2 to 3%, maybe 5%, some say. So most of your thinking is subconscious. And learning how to be positive in your conscious mind and using your subconscious to back that. And so the science, this is not gibbledygook, this is science behind it, the way the brain works. You can have a lot better life and a lot better position to deal with work, people, stress, etc., than if you take a very negative look on life.
Okay, so look, it's about time for a break here on Dollars and Making Sense. I'm Ray Trevison, your host. I'm really happy to have Simon Madden with us at the microphone. We're going to go for a short break and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, and thank you for listening to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly radio program about finance, money, and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and nationally on the Community Radio Network around Australia. The views, comments, and opinions aired during our program should not be construed or viewed as financial advice. Any commentary is general advice only and does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. You should consider whether the advice is suitable for you and your personal circumstances. If in doubt, you should contact an authorised, licensed financial planner. We welcome questions and feedback, and you can get in touch with us via our blog, social media channels, or email. Please search for Dollars and Making Sense in your favourite podcast platform or check out our blog at otgcapital.com.au/blog. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Dollars and Making Sense. I'm your host, Ray Trevison, and I have at the microphone with me today, Simon Madden. Now, Simon, we've talked a lot about your football career, and I guess because you were such a leading figure, and I guess when I played footy, anybody that was over 6 foot, you ended up looking up to anyway. But I'd like to change the focus of our discussion a little around male roles and leadership. Now, I'm an ex-Defence Force commissioned officer. Now, we were taught leadership from a manual, believe it or not. And I guess, you know, do you believe that this quality can be taught And if so, you know, what form is that taking in today's world of the internet and influencers and social media, et cetera? And the kind of thing that we've been talking about, you know, the positivity of being you at, as you at, in the workplace. Is leadership still there, do you think?
Oh, mate, look, it's really interesting. A leader's born, a leader's made. I don't think necessarily anybody's born a leader. I think how they develop, what they do. Again, it's not what you do, it's what, you know, it's not what happens to you, it's how you react to it and what you learn from what you've done. Mm-hmm. There was, again, a traditional male role model was the older you were and the whiter you were the boss, right? That's years ago, right? And now that's changed so much now that it's not necessarily years, but it is experience. I've seen some very good young leaders because they've had a lot of experience in the area. But I really think that you have to open up the door to say, well, it's not just a straight male who's going to be the boss. It's going to be the straight female. It might be the gay male. It might be the gay female. It might be, doesn't matter, anybody who, and I think in the modern world, the leadership's changed because, again, you had to be absolutely perfect. There was no vulnerability. And one of you find now in the workplace is people, you know, if you're the leader, you don't know all the answers. You have good people around you who actually support you and you have good people in different areas. And they, two things, you delegate. In the modern world, leadership is very big on delegation.
Mm-hmm.
More important, that is really good feedback, really clear feedback. And you never shoot the messenger. Otherwise, you never get the real truth. You just get yes people. So I think leadership is developed. The concept of apprenticeships in business or studentships, or because you can get some information out of the book, but it's about practical use of it and then practical experience of it. So you go and do. I'm doing at the moment some strategy work with organisations about their next planning for the next 12 months, 6 months, 12 months, and a lot of the stuff I do is funny little activities. But just go with me. You know, there's a little bit of madness in this. Go and do this. But why we learn? Why would I do that with a group of business people? Because I could say something and make a point, and you go, yeah, yeah, and you'd lose it. But you actually do an action or do an activity or do this, and then I go, have you thought about this? See what? Why did I do this? And they go, aha, oh, okay, I get that. How do I relate that to work? So more and more that learning, yes, the developmental learning and not just automatically going up the list. You know, sometimes people are just, put up the line till their, total ability to do anything can't be done anymore because they're way out of their depth. I think that good programs of leadership development, and I run leadership courses for people, and I find that, for me, education is, I don't have all the answers. I say I don't have any answers, I have very good questions. But education comes from taking what you already have and then putting in new information, new experiences, and adding them together. So it's not the old, I'm going to open up your head and pull the information in. I'm going to have an experience with you and discuss it and talk to you. And when you've been in armed forces, your training isn't just always out of a mind. If you're going to learn how to use a rifle, you go and learn how to use a rifle. If you're going to carry a backpack, if you're going to do long walks, etc., you've got to use. And with leadership, even though it's a bit more of a soft skill, so they call it, although it's very hard, it's having experiences of it and watching other people and learning from other people and putting good leaders together and learning from them. And so I believe leadership is more important than ever before, but also it's not just the role of one person. There's got to be, you know, the buck stops somewhere. There's got to be someone at the top, but that more of about delegation and having a group around you that can inform you and keep you up to scratch. Any leader of a country will have a whole lot of people around him. Any, you know, I can't remember what the leader of the armed forces is, the vice admiral or the whatever.
Yes, he's the chief of the ADF. So
yes, the chief, right? So you think about that group of people who sit around the table and have to make big decisions. How much information is actually being fed to him? Mm-hmm. To find people who know, and they have to be honest, open, and clear. And then the delegation has to be good, and the feedback has to be good. So I think leadership is still what it's always been, but it just has to be a bit more educated, a bit wider spread of what it's like.
Yeah, I guess one of the terms we used to use in the armed forces when we were teaching soldiers or officers alike was like this, do that. So, you know, four simple words. And and it's funny because I often, the reason I like the idea of having you on the show talking about mental health and again, role models and the like, I mean, I have in front of me 10 two-letter words that is a famous quote from Ron Barassi, is if it is to be, it is up to me. And so I really like those kind of those sayings. And I guess from that perspective, when you were out leading in today's environment, I've seen this now bear its ugly head. Are mental health concerns real, or just, and I've heard this actually said on some right-wing, well, what I would say certainly interesting commentators, or just another woke agenda? I mean, they don't even know what the term woke means, but that's their way of saying it's politically correct, therefore it's garbage. I mean, is mental health concerns, is that a real thing to you, Simon?
Oh, totally. I know people have had serious mental health issues, and it's like it's not made up. It's not, I'm going to get out of work with this. And there's, I've done some stuff with SANE, which is complex mental health. What you're finding now is that resilience is a fascinating word, and I'm always fascinated with. We have a school up a primary school up the end of our street, you know, about 300 meters, and every now and then I go for a walk, and if I'm up early enough, you don't see anybody, and if I'm up late, how many kids get dropped off at school when they're within walking distance? And what's happening is mental health can be the end of not building resilience. And I speak to people about five steps to mental health resilience. Yes, mental health is a problem. Yes, our world is much more complex. So that's putting more stress on people. Yes, it's easy to point at someone and say, oh, no, you've made this up. Now, in any situation, there's going to be maybe a percentage who, you know, I'm sure we're not 100% correct. So maybe there's a small percentage of people who pull the old, I've got mental health to get out of something or to stop. But realistically, most people with these issues, we're all under stress of some type. Stress is good. No, stress isn't good or bad. Too much stress is bad, and not enough stress is bad. Because if you want to build a muscle, too much stress tears the muscle. No stress, you don't get a muscle. So it's a wrong one.
That's a good analogy. I like that, Simon. I like that a lot.
Strength, it's got to have a bit of stress. It's just too much. So I have a question mark about, yes, we have mental health issues, but are we looking at the end rather than the start? Are we building resilience in our children? I'm always big on team sport. I played team sport and I loved it. And I was real about us, not about me. Although, you know, I keep telling you. But it's I say get your children into a team sport, and then somebody says to me, oh, but they're not sporty. Okay, all right, the choir, the dance group, the theatre group, whatever, anything where it's about us, and then practice learning to fail, and it's not the end of the world if you fail. But a lot of parents aren't letting their children develop into their own being and their own resilience. And it's a really interesting one. You see somebody fall over, and I've seen this with my kids. If they fall over and hit their body really hard, they just get up and cry, and they come running back. But every now and then a child falls over, and they get up and they look at their parents to see their reaction. And if the parents say, brush yourself down, get up, you're right, they do. Yeah. The parents go, oh, you're all right. The kid goes, oh, no, I'm not. You know, how are we building resilience in the people? So I think mental health is definitely there. And I think the complexity of our society makes it harder, and so much media and so many people telling you how you should run your life. I think we've got to do much better at building resilience in our people. And one of the part of the resilience is failing. It's the word fail. A lot of when I played sport, it was too hard for parents to turn up because they're all working on Saturday mornings when we were playing. So you'd get three vehicles to take 20 kids to football in another suburb. A sedan suspension wagon and a utility. And you all wanted to sit at the back of the ute going to and from. Imagine if you do that now. But it wasn't parents standing around trying to live their life vicariously through their children. You went out and played footy, you came back. How'd you go? We lost. Bad luck. Now a lot of people are standing around, and my kid has to be the best. No, just give your kid the opportunity to be their best, not the best, their best. And if they fail along the way, make sure that you teach them about it's okay to fail. It's not nice to fail, But the idea of giving everybody a sticker for, you know, everybody's sticker for, you know, joining in, I don't think many kids collect the stickers for joining in and put them on the wall.
I might say to you, Simon, I play baseball. I play Masters baseball at the moment, even at 62, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And I'm often reminded, because in baseball, even in the highest echelons of the game, to be a really good batsman, you average 300. Now, what that actually means is that every time you go to bat, you fail seven times out of 10, and you are considered the best of the best. And I think that's a great thing to harp on. So look, I think in wrapping up, you know, we've made comment that men are potentially still suffering in silence. And what I'd like to finish the show off today is maybe, Simon, your point is to people that you think, you know, where do they go if they believe they need to be talking to somebody, a professional? You know, where are the, you know, what kind of resources would you recommend that people start looking at?
Look, and I said, I'm not an expert in it. I don't pretend to be an expert in this area, but I do. I have spoken about this and been asked, and I've run some of the things past business psychologists to make sure it's all okay. There are the normal ones, you know, like Beyond Blue. If you looked up mental health resources just on anybody on their computer, you'll have a lot list of them. But the other point to which men are very poor at is developing strong relations with other men where they can, without alcohol, I love a red wine and a beer like anybody else, but having a coffee with somebody and sitting there, and there's two questions you ask. You go, hey, how are you going? And then you go, how are you really going? And being able to listen, because we all say, how are you going? Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, great. But how are you really going? And if you're struggling, why? And because sometimes it's just, remember, you have two ears and one mouth, and sometimes just the listening. I can use the one mouth pretty good. I'm sure you can. but listening at the right time, being a really good listener for someone, and that because you think so fast. If somebody just listens to you, actually slow down your thinking. You hear it yourself, so it actually clarifies your thoughts just by talking to somebody else. So just being a good listener and being there for somebody is really important. And men aren't very good at that. Historically, women, you know, use a lot more words in one day than men do, but we're not very good at our emotional intelligence. We're getting better. But the idea is just having a friend, you have to have five friends. It could be a partner. It could be a brother, a sibling. It could be a doctor. It could be, you need five people to open up to, and that's a good start.
Simon, that's great tips. I mean, we'll talk again. I'm going to get you back on the show because, crikey, we could talk all day about this stuff. And I'm going to tell you about my men's swimming group that I feel very privileged to be part of. But look, it's been a great show today. Thank you so kindly for coming on Dollars and Making Sense. And until next time, I bid you farewell. And to the Community Radio Network around Australia, we were really pleased to have you on today.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to talking again, Mike.
All the best. Cheers.